unto me, it appeareth that almost all the monarchs of the earth
are to be found in the Shaba of Yama. And, O Master, almost all the Nagas, principal Daityas, rivers and oceans, are to be found in the Shaba of Varuna. So the Yakshas, the Guhyakas, the Rakshasas, the Gandharvas and Apsaras, and the deity Yama, having the bull for his vehicle, are to be found in the Shaba of the Lord of Treasures. Thou hast said in the Shaba of the Grand Sar to be seen all the great Rishis, all the gods, all the branches of learning. As regards the Shaba of Chakra, however, thou hast named, O Muni, all the gods, the Gandharvas, and various Rishis. But, O great Muni, thou hast mentioned one and only one king, namely the royal Rishi Harishchandra, as living in the Shaba of the illustrious chief of the gods. What act was performed by that celebrated king, or what ascetic penances with steady vows, in consequence of which he hath been equal to Indra himself? O Brahmana, how didst thou also meet with my father, the exalted Pandu, now a guest in the region of the Pitris? O exalted one of excellent vows, hath he told thee anything? O tell me all, as I am exceedingly curious to hear all this from thee. Right, so now he's pointed out that in these Shabbas that there's specific groups that are always there. And, you know, what then interests him is that all the kings are in Yama's court, but only Harishchandra is in Indra's court. You know, so how is that? How would Harishchandra, what special thing did he do that he ended up there? Narada said, O King of Kings, I shall tell thee all that thou hast asked me about Harishchandra. I shall presently tell thee of his high excellence. He was a powerful king, in fact, an emperor over all the kings of the earth. Indeed, all the kings of the earth obeyed his sway. O monarch, mounted alone upon a victorious car adorned with gold, that king, by the prowess of his weapons, brought the whole earth with her seven islands under its sway. So it's always been, you always hear in reference, whatever the king is, it's always seven islands, right? So this idea that it was all together as one island before and then separated. Because even when it's talking going back, you know, how you say, what was his name? One of his chariot wheels and all them. Priyavrata. You're talking about, you know, billions of years ago, and it's still talking about seven islands. Ramachandra, it's seven islands. You know, it's always seven islands. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's just something to keep these people busy, right? You know, if you have nothing, it's called, in Bengali you say naikaj, koi baj. Right? You know koi? It's like the double puffed rice, really fluffy. It weighs nothing, right? 1 kilo is like a bag this big. So it says if you have nothing to do, then you make puffed rice. It pops, it makes a lot, it looks very big, but it's actually nothing. Right? So that's the modern, you know, how you say, some of the modern academics seem to excel in this profession. O monarch, having subjugated the whole earth with her mountains, forests, and woods, he made preparations for the great sacrifice called the Rajasuya. All the kings of the earth brought, at his command, wealth unto that sacrifice. All of them consented to become distributors of food and gifts unto the Brahmanas, and were fed on the occasion. Oh, that were fed on the occasion. At that sacrifice, King Harishchandra gave away unto all who asked wealth that was five times what each had solicited. At the conclusion of the sacrifice, the king gratified the Brahmanas that came from various countries with large presentations of various kinds of wealth. The Brahmanas gratified with various kinds of food and enjoyable articles, given away unto them to the extent of their desires, and with the heaps of jewels distributed amongst them, began to say, King Harishchandra is superior to all kings in energy and renown. Know, O monarch, O bull of the Bharata race, It was for this reason that Harishchandra shone more brightly than thousands of other kings. The powerful Harishchandra, having concluded his great sacrifice, became installed, O king, in the sovereignty of the earth, and looked resplendent on his throne. O bull of the Bharata race, all those monarchs that perform the sacrifice of Rajasuya, attaining to the region of Indra, pass their time in felicity in Indra's company. O bull of the Bharata race, those kings also that yield up their lives without turning their backs on the field of battle, attain to the mansion of Indra, and live in joy with him. Those again that yield up their bodies after severe ascetic penances also attain to the same region and shine brightly there for ages. Right. So in other words, of all the sacrifice, if you do a Rajasuya, right? Because otherwise, the Ashwamedha, you have to do 100 of them. Right? But Rajasuya, you only have to do one. Right? So that you'll get the Indra's kingdom. The other is that if in battle, they're fighting and they're, how you say, not turning their back, you know, so they're fighting with full enthusiasm and commitment. Then if they die in that battle, then they'll also go to heaven, right, Indra's place. Or if they're performing austerities, you know, as vanaprastas, they're performing such severe austerities that in that state, they leave the bodies, right? Yes.
Can you explain why so much value is given to this dying in the battle? Is there any gradation, or if it's like a just war for religion, or maybe they're just trying to enlarge their kingdoms? Can you elaborate on this idea?
The idea is, see, the whole thing in the Vedic culture is focus. You don't have focus, nothing happens. Right? So the whole idea is that human life should be efficient. It should get something done. It should be progressive. To be progressive, you have to be focused to get anything done. And what you're focused on then should be righteous. Right? So the war is being conducted by righteous means. What is the cause of the war? That's another thing. Right? But the point is, Kshatriyas have their duties, how they fight. I mean, in other words, they're engaged in the fight because of righteousness. Now, whether the kings themselves, that's another question. Right? Like Duryodhana, it's not, you couldn't call it exactly righteousness. But the point is it is a method open to Kshatriyas to gain kingdoms. But that all the others that are under him, they're performing their Kshatriya duties, so it's according to righteousness. Right? Means, in other words, you have to get used to the fact that there's no such thing as, except in what's in connection to Krishna, that 100% it's all perfect. And we're looking for this, it's all there, so if there's any flaw, then it's not that. Oh, you know, they're a Brahmin, but then they did this, so they're not a Brahmin. That doesn't fly in the Vedic culture. That's a uninformed modern perspective that works very well for people who like to stand at the wall and throw stones at whoever's brought there for, you know, entertainment, right? Because basically, they don't have a life. That's the bottom line. The thing is it's always a balance. It's never always 100%. Material world, there's no such thing as 100%. It's always a balance. So religion is knowing the nature of the thing and finding that balance. What is the best possible result and endeavor you can get out of the present situation you're in? That's called perfection. Right? And that you do that with the purpose of its religion, then that's standard. That you're doing that in religion without a desire for results, that's better. That will give you liberation. That you're doing it out of religion without desire for results to please Krishna, that will liberate you and give you bhakti, and at the same time give you the material situation. So you get all three. You'll get the results of karma, jnana, and bhakti. Well, if you're performing jnana, you'll get the results of karma and bhakti. You're performing karma, you get the results of karma. You're not performing karma, you don't get buddhas. Like that. So Therefore, it's someone has their duty, they're performing like that. But these there's so many rules on it. They follow it, you get the benefit. They don't. So the main point is the Kshatriya goes into battle with the idea that I win, I enjoy here, I lose, I go to the heavenly planet. So they're just not on the bodily platform. But in it, because it's fighting, then chivalry and anger is used as mediums. Just like sweet words will be used with the ladies, or how do you say, what is it? What did Prabhupada say? Was it English for the, what was it? English is for horses, German for dogs, Italian for gods, and French for women, or something like that. So you're speaking the right language. So for Kshatriyas, then it's chivalry, anger, that then creates the right mood. But the whole point is focus. There's no focus, there's no rasa. And the whole point is, yeah, there has to be rasa. So the fighting is chivalry. So if there's no focus, there is no chivalrous rasa. That's why the kings are there. That's actually, so you're dealing, the human elements are quite different from just surviving and eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. So, therefore, it's based on religious principles. So, whether all persons involved have a religious attitude, that's another thing. But the reason for the war is religious, and those that are taking part are following the religious principles. Does that make sense?
Because, yeah, if I understood correctly, it was on the same level of doing many austerities before the same destination.
Yeah, it's the same. It's just like, even someone once, there's one of the elements means anything where there's this full commitment always gives the best, because to die because of austerities means full commitment. To die on the battlefield, means facing the enemy and actually fighting. Then that is full commitment, like that. Or it also says that if someone dies protecting Brahmins and cows, they're immediately elevated to the heavenly planets. So it's just that full commitment. That's what is appreciated. No one appreciates something half done. It's always that full focus and commitment. Right? Stories are written about the person who is committed. No one writes the stories about the guys that weren't. Except nowadays, sometimes they have these bozo movies where some guy is just useless and then they have it. But it has no theme, no plot, and I'm sure they don't make any money and they definitely don't get any awards. But whatever, they make them anyway. I don't know why. Probably because the directors and producers have no focus, right? So, you know what I'm saying? Because without focus, there's no endeavor. To focus means you have to have an identity. Right? So that's the modern thing, is people don't really know who they are, so they're not really focused. So they have to do something to get their bile moving. So generally, the general thing is politics and morality. And they combine these two and they give it the politically correct name of political correctness. Right? But it's not actually real politics. I mean, it's not, it's not politics based on dharma, and it's not morality based on dharma. It's politics and morality based on speculation. But that combination, somehow or another, they feel very good about themselves, can sleep at night. But actually, it's only practiced by those who don't know who they are. Those who know who they are practice dharma. Then they use politics or use morality and ethics as tools. But this is their identity. And that's not an identity, it's not a rasa. Senses are rasa, emotions are rasa, bhakti's rasa. But the platform of pranamoy isn't a rasa. That's why I can say so strongly these people don't have a life. They're not tasting rasa. Anamoy, manamoy, and anandamoy, that's where rasa is tasted. The other is some fleeting derivations of one of these three, or not even one of these three, the middle between the two, right? Between anamoy and manamoy, Pranamoya will catch a little bit of each, but it can't get anything full. And Vijnanamoya will get something in between religion and bhakti, which is the transcendence. But it's not actually, you know, truly transcendental. So it's a very bad place to situate yourself. But the modern, for the bourgeois culture, that's where they situate themselves. Therefore, a lot of very dissatisfied people. So the whole thing is the science of rasa, right? The Vedic culture is the science of rasa, the science of relationships. It's not an economic and a managerial system. It includes that, but it's not. That's not its purpose. Like that. Is that okay? O king of the Kuru race, O son of Kunti, thy father Pandu, beholding the good fortune of Harishchandra, and wondering much thereat, hath told me something. Knowing that I was coming to the world of men, he bowed unto me and said, Thou shouldest tell Yudhishthira, O Rishi, that he can subjugate the whole earth, inasmuch as his brothers are all obedient to him. And having done this, let him commence the grand sacrifice called Rajasuya. He is my son. If he performeth that sacrifice, I may, like Harishchandra, soon attain to the region of Indra, and there in his sabha pass countless years in continuous joy. I told him in reply, O king, I shall tell thy son all this if I go to the world of man. I have now told thee what he said, O tiger among men. Accomplish then, O son of Pandu, the desires of thy father. If thou performest that sacrifice, thou shalt then be able to go, along with thy deceased ancestors, into the same region that is inhabited by the chief of the immortals. It hath been said, O king, that performance of this great sacrifice is attended with many obstacles. A class of Rakshasas called Brahma Rakshasas, employed in obstructing all sacrifices, always search for loopholes when this great sacrifice is commenced. On the commencement of such a sacrifice, a war may take place, destroying the Kshatriyas and even furnishing occasion for the destruction of the whole earth. A slight obstacle may involve the whole earth in ruin. Reflecting upon all this, O King of Kings, do what is for thy good. Be thou watchful and ready in protecting the four orders of thy subjects. Grow thou in prosperity and enjoy thou felicity. Gratify thou the Brahmins with gifts of wealth. I have now answered in detail all that thou hast asked me. With thy leave, I will now go to the city Dwaravati of that Dasharhas. What's Dwaravati?
Dwarka.
Vaishampayana said, O Janamejaya, having said this unto the son of Prita, Nard went away, accompanied by those rishis with whom he had come. And after Nard had gone away, King Yudhishthira, thou of Kuru race, began to think along with his brothers of that foremost of sacrifices called Rajasuya. So now, would Yudhishthira do this sacrifice on his own? No. So then, why is he doing it?
To make his father go to heaven.
You're going to say, yeah? You're going to say?
His brothers are obedient,
that makes allows him to do it. But the whole idea is that means that that means there, but he's doing because his father's asked. So because in these things then it's a package deal, right? Package you go up, package you go down, right? Here, somebody like this, Yudhishthira, does something so great with those brothers, then he, his brothers, his forefathers, they all go to the heavenly planets. Right? Or if you do something wrong, like, what do you call it? Duryodhana, you know, Duryodhana, Shakuni, Dhritarashtra, what's the other one? Oh, Dushasan, he's a small timer. Karna. Yeah, Karna. So then they insult Draupadi, then they all share in the karma. Right? The king gives just punishment, then those who are to be punished, the criminals, get their rightful due. And if he doesn't, then he, his family, his country, they suffer the reaction. Right? A leader gives improper judgment and punishment against somebody, then he, his own family, and his own, whatever is his community, you know, whatever is under his control, will all suffer. Right? They can't say, well, I'm a devotee, it doesn't matter. No, this is just the way the material energy works, right? Devotees also get cut if they, you know, if they slip with a knife, right? They can't say, I'm a devotee, it doesn't happen. Oh, I fell off the third story, nothing will happen, I'm a devotee. No, there's the material energy, it still works the way it is. Right? Does that make sense? So,
how do we get into that?
Okay, so it all is a package. So one should always think of that. Right, the whole Vedic culture is working. It's a wonderful balance between the individual, the family, the community, the nation, the world. Right, it's an amazing thing that all these contradictory things can go on simultaneously. Why can it go on simultaneously? Because all contradictions are resolved in Krishna. So when it's connected to Krishna's desire, then everything works. If it's not, it won't. That's why it's foolish to say you will find a solution to a material problem without Krishna consciousness. Right? There's no such thing as a material solution without connecting to Krishna, because material energy comes from Krishna. It works according to his direction. It just doesn't exist. Only the uninformed will make such claims. It just doesn't exist. Right? I mean, if you look at it logically, God created the place, it works according to what he says. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So then, that's there. Then it's like everybody cooperates. If you cooperate, you can do something wonderful. Right? That's the whole point, is that the individual is committed, and their next thing is committed to the group. Right? Like that. Then, if you do that, then it all works very nicely. If there's not commitment, if there's not focus, then you won't get anything done, right, as a group. An individual might, but as a group you won't. So that's then even greater. So you have the individual who's committed. People are always interested in that story. Now, if you have a group of individuals committed, that's even more interesting, right? You know, how they're individually committed, how they commit as a group. Yes? How do you inspire that commitment and focus? Knowledge and relationships. Right? In other words, with knowledge, then you know what to do. With knowledge, you do it. If you do that, because it's done with proper knowledge and proper the mood, and you know, that matches, means the knowledge will tell you what everything is. What is to be done? What's the mood? What's the results that you can get? What's the purpose of everything? Right? Everything's given. You follow that, then it will establish relationship. Relationships are strong, then there's always the same mood, right? You know, the same rasa, the same flavor, you know, like that. Or, you know, sometimes the flavor, Prabhupada translates it as color. Right? And that way then, you know, you have a, how you say, community in color, right? You know, like that, you know. Not, you know, black and white, of course, is also, but I'm just saying. Does that make sense? So, it's proper performance of one's prescribed duties that makes everything work. That's where it starts. Then that you're doing it for others, that creates the community. You know what I'm saying? You do it for yourself, that's austerity. But then the results are being done for others, that's sacrifice. Does that make sense? So they go together. It means you can't have real sacrifice without austerity. That's why someone who's not qualified, let's say someone does a yajna and doesn't give good charity, then it's said they're unqualified to do a yajna. Right? You notice here, Harishchandra, how much did he give? five times the stipulated amount. Right? So then that you get very good results. If you give the stipulated amount, because that's what you have, that's good. But if you give less than the stipulated amount and you have it, then it was better, you will get more benefit from not having done that yajna than having done it. In other words, you won't get any credit. In fact, you get discredit. Does that make sense? House programs, yogas at home. I would have to say if you go down to the bottom, it's insecurity. That means the feminine nature, if it's secure, it functions. If it's insecure, it doesn't function. Right? Means, yeah. So, therefore, the living entities, being in that category, then if they're secure, then they have an identity. Then you can interact with others. You don't have an identity, you're insecure. You don't want to interact with others because you don't know what will happen. Or you don't have faith, it's still insecurity, that by performing those things it will go nice. Right? And there's a lack of training. Like if you want to have a house program, what does that mean? Right? The house has to be clean, it has to look good, and there has to be food, right? And you have to sacrifice by giving all your energy to everybody who comes. So someone who's insecure is always in anxiety. Someone in anxiety doesn't like to do that, doesn't like to make that endeavor, right? Because if there's insecurity, there's no attraction. If there's no attraction, there's no attachment. Attachment makes you do the activity. Right? So if you're attached, then you're going to do it. If you're not attached, you won't do it. Right? So if there's no attachment, means in other words, if there's the sensitivity is not there, the attachment is understood to be not there, means the attraction's not there, so that creates insecurity. Does that make sense? So therefore, how do you have a house party and all these programs based on a lifetime of getting one piece of paper that is in a frame hanging on your wall, right? No relationships are established, no food is cooked, no people are hosted, but you can get money to do all that, but you won't know how to do that. So that's why in the Vedic culture you have Varna Ashram, right? You get your qualifications so you can make your money, but you also have so many duties in ashram so that you can function as a human being. Because if you only have varna, means you have money. You're not actually human. You know what I'm saying? Like that. It's the ashram, that's the spiritual platform. That's what makes humans unique. Otherwise, bees have occupations also. Ants have occupations. They work well together. They do big work. But it's the ashram that actually makes the human, right? So then that's the difficulty, is that all these things aren't seen as important because there's an insecurity that it doesn't work or can't provide it. Because otherwise, means there's always something going on, right? How many kids are around here? 150, 200, right? Then you have adults. So there's always some samskar, some program going on like that, or just inviting friends. That there would always be an occasion for something happening. But it's not seen as it's important. Or they have no idea about it because people like to eat, they don't know how to cook. You know, boil water means you have to make plans for 2 days before you do that, right? You know. So it's a problem. Right, so all this modern think of, well, I don't want to fit into that thing, means they don't know who they are. That's why I can also strongly say is they have no identity. You know, because someone with a piece of paper that can make money, that's not an identity. You know, it's an occupation for a job. Okay, that's 8 hours a day. Now what about the other 16? You know, what about weekends? You know, what about vacations? What about your relationship with your family? Oh, I'm the one in the family with the piece of paper. Yeah, well, I got a piece of paper also. My paper is bigger than your paper, you know. Oh, mine's written with old English on it. Well, mine's, you know, done with, you know, some modern script, not that old funky stuff. Mine's done on parchment, you know, like that. Well, no, mine's done on, you know, how you say, organic, ecologically, you know, how you say, grown, you know, how you say, paper. Recycled also. You know. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So, means it's not a problem to work and get a piece of paper, but you also have to make yourself a person, you know, and have some qualities, have character, have social skills that you can actually show affection to others, exchange that, have qualities that people want to be around you, you know, like that. Does that make sense? I remember one devotee was telling me when he was a kid is that all their relatives kind of lived around and all the kids, you know, they lived very close to each other. You know, basically on the same block and this and that. And then there's a group of kids that are in that group, right, from all the families. And they just move around. You know, they're at this person's house today and then they go over to that person's. And whichever house they're in, that's the one they eat in. Right? If they're in this, if, you know, the uncle's house at lunch, lunch is for all the kids there. It's not that, you know, now the mother tells the child, now tell all your friends to go now, it's time for lunch. You know, just they all eat there. If the next day they're over at you know, someone else's, you know, the cousin's house, they all eat there. Just it's just one, you know, entity. Like for the kids. Adults, then they don't do that. The adults just don't show up at mealtime. The kids do. It's just, you know, the way it works. Does that make sense? So that kind of thing, that's the point. But then it has to be attractive. It has to be edible. Right? You know? Like that. Does that make sense? Any other questions from the Barbie Club? No? No? Okay. Okay, then you have these rakshasas who can get in the way of the sacrifice and look for anything that might go wrong. And if you do something wrong, they'll get you, right? It's their right, right? Just like if you chant japa with your beads out, then the rakshasas, the yakshas, the gandharvas, paisachas, anybody from the antariksha, then they can get all the benefits of your chanting, like that. So there's always these loopholes, right? There's always a loophole, you know, in something, you know. So then the rakshasas, it's, you know, especially here, Brahma rakshasas, because they were brahmanas who knew everything perfectly. They know the shastras and all that, just they did something wrong, they end up as rakshasas. So then they're the ones that check, right? Because they know. They know the yajna, so then they'll do that. And a war may break out, as we see, is it almost broke out there, but then Krishna subdued it with a flick of his, you know, the Sudarshan. But even that, it almost started a war. Like that. So it's a dangerous thing. So only someone very qualified, very thoughtful, that is trying to protect, right? Now here, if we just say, you do this great sacrifice, you go to the heaven, but what that then anybody could try for it, but only someone who's actually interested in protecting the whole earth, right, deserves to be emperor of the earth through Rajasuya. Does that make sense? Because to do it, you have to protect the whole earth, means you have to do everything right so that there isn't destruction, there isn't a war, right? Then that person's qualified. The person that just gets all the rituals or works on that but doesn't look to the protection, and that's everybody else's problem. That person doesn't deserve to be emperor. Right? So we can see Harishchandra was like that. And Pandu wouldn't have suggested this unless he thought Yudhishthira was also qualified with that same mentality. Is that okay? Section 8. Vaishampayana said, Yudhishthira, having heard these words of Narada, began to sigh heavily. O Bharata, engaged in his thoughts about the Rajasuya, the king had no peace of mind. Having heard of the glory of the illustrious monarchs of old, being certain about the acquisitions of regions of felicity by performers of sacrifices in consequence of their sacred deeds, and thinking especially of that royal sage Harishchandra, who had performed the great sacrifice, King Yudhishthira desired to make preparations for the Rajasuya sacrifice. Worshipping his counselors and others present at his Shabha, and being worshipped by them in return, he began to discuss with them about that sacrifice. Right? What do you see? So means, so what's this point here? He worships others, they worship him back. He takes care, but he does respect them. In other words, he respects them for his position. They respect them for, right? He respects the counselors, and the counselors respect him. Is that what you're going to say?
I just want to say that he has a very strong relationship.
He has a very strong relationship, yes. Because otherwise, why would it work like this? So in other words, if relationship is understood, then these things take place. Does that make sense? Right? So, yeah, another person you see that always does this before he does something very great.
Arjuna.
Yes, what an example.
They were in the Panchala, in the Swayamvara.
When he was at the Swayamvara, Panchala, then?
Yeah, he first offered respect to Yudhishthira Maharaj, then when he goes to take the bow, then he also offers respect to the bow.
Okay.
And then he thinks of Krishna.
Okay.
He does everything.
Okay.
So then, before he kidnaps Subhadra, they send him.
Yeah, before, okay. So then, Yudhishthira, before he kidnaps Subhadra, then he takes the blessings of his brother. Before picking up the bow at the Swayamvara, he offers respects to the bow. Also, when he gets the chariot from Soma, right? First he goes, circumambulates the chariot, then he steps on it. Everybody else just steps on it, which is okay. Right? Arjuna is special. Yudhishthira is special because they do this. Right? They have respect for the thing. It's a chariot. You could say it's a chariot. I'm the man. Right? But the point is the chariot has a history, has a position, has potency. Therefore, that potencies are respected, right? The persons who gave it, the persons that connected to, and the potency of Krishna. So in other words, this is how you see Krishna and everything. They're respecting it. But it's not that they're respecting the form, but they respect a big marble in the middle of the desert. Because it's a big marble. No, it's the potency of something that big that is God. The rock itself doesn't matter. Does that make sense? So that's the difference between, what is it called, the pantheism? Or, you know, where they worship nature? That's pantheism. Between that and actual the Vaishnavas being able to see Krishna in everything. That's the difference. Right? One sees the form, the other sees the Krishna's potency. Right? Something is the form that's worshipable. No, it's not that. It's the potency that's worshipable, the person behind the potency. Or a person's connected to the potency. Right? Does that make sense? Then the form becomes respectable because it's connected to the potency, but it's the potency that makes the whole thing work. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
So based on that vision, he becomes a servant of basically everything, right?
He becomes servant of everything, yes. So that's the point. The devotee is humble. There's nothing, nobody and nothing that he feels superior to. Because it's all Krishna. Like that. You're going to say something there? No? You? No, it's just that. Having reflected much, that king of kings, that bull amongst Kurus, inclined his mind towards making preparations for the Rajasuya. That prince of wonderful energy and prowess, however, reflecting upon virtue and righteousness, again set his heart to find out what would be for the good of all his people. Right. So now it says he, in great anxiety, having no peace of mind, he was reflecting all this. when would he have been reflecting?
At night.
At night. Okay, you were going to say? Night. You? Yeah. So in other words, in his time, he's reflecting. He's not in anxiety when he's in his court, because in court, he's taking care of the people who are coming to visit him. He's taking care of the administration of the kingdom. But on those things, big works, he does that in private. Right? Or with somebody very special, you know, either with his brothers or with his prime minister or with the Rajguru. Does that make sense? Then he'll do that. But otherwise, generally it's on his own, then he'll contemplate. Now he's contemplated this, then he sets his heart to that, but he sets his heart now for what is good for his citizens. Right? Does that make sense? So now, having done that, now he's worked it out, he's that, now he's committed, now what's good for the citizens? Immediately goes back. That's his natural duty. Right? You may have something that takes prominence, but then once it's done, then it comes back into its natural state. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. For Yudhishthira, that foremost of all virtuous men, always kind unto his subjects, worked for the good of all without making any distinctions. Indeed, so no distinctions means he treated everybody equally? He gave the same treatment to everybody? No, what does it mean? Yes, according to the position. In other words, he made no distinctions means everybody deserved something according to their position. Whatever their position, they deserved the protection and the results that they required. But different people get different things, right? Does that make sense? So then, it's like that. So that's important. So when we say equal, that doesn't mean that the results or the treatment given to everybody is equal. In other words, the facility given is not equal. But according to what someone deserves, everyone gets what they deserve. That's the equality. Right? You eat 5 chapatis. You get your 5 chapatis. Someone else eats 20 chapatis. They get their 20. Right? If we say, no, we treat everyone equal, everyone gets 5 chapatis. That would not be equal, because for one person that's a full stomach, for another that's a quarter stomach. How is that equal? So that's the problem, is modern equality is based on just the form. They actually don't, I mean, just, I mean, how you say, a quantitative one item. They don't actually look at the people, even though that's the fun, that's the most amazing thing. The liberalist claims that they're dealing with the individual, with the person. But if you look at it, they're actually not, because they fit them into rules, right? And the reason that they take that position is they say the conservatives only talk about the rules. But they do the same thing. They just cover it with a little bit of emotion, and somehow or another everybody buys it. Right? It's funny. It's amazing. Maya is so clever like that. Sweet words get a lot done, right? No. So sweet words for someone's benefit, that's good. Sweet words otherwise still gets work done, but still no one really benefits.
So on this point of equality, when, for example, when we are serving prasadam, we have a certain amount of prasadam, and let's say we have a certain amount of sweets.
You have a certain amount of sweets, so that's another thing, because that's not, that you don't call food. The combination between the whole menu. Then if you only have one piece to give everyone, that you give one piece. But the point is everyone gets food to be full. Right? If it's going to be less food, then everybody gets less. Does that make sense? Just like Bhima. They go out begging. Right? How did they divide the food? Yeah. They took half of it, they give it to Bhima. Right? The other half, the 6 of them, share. So it's going to be less for everybody, including Bhima. You know what I'm saying? So someone who eats less, they get a little bit. Someone who eats more gets a little bit more, but it's still less for them. Right? Does that make sense? You know? Is that okay? That makes sense. Still, you have to distinguish for those who can't understand this process. Then you take care of them a little differently. You know, like if they're 3 years old, they don't really understand what's going on. So you take care of them differently. Is that okay? Indeed, shaking off both anger and arrogance, Yudhishthira always said, "Give unto each what is due to each." Right. So this is monarchy. So it includes, you know, what you would call, you know, your socialism, communism, all these different things, because everybody gets what's due, but it's not equal that everybody wears the same size shirt. In China, I think it was they had two sizes of clothes. 36 was the standard size, the shirt and pants. And then if you were really big, then they had size 42. And that's all, everybody wore the same thing. It was the same shirt, same cut, same pants, same color. The whole country wore it. So that's their idea of equal. Okay, it works, whatever, but... But due to each, but that means you have to know Dharma to know what each deserves. Right? It means a qualified Brahmin, you give him five times the amount, then he will be very pleased and he will use that for good things. A, you know, less qualified Brahmin, but still properly situated, you give him the regular amount. Maybe you could give him a little extra, but not too much extra. Someone who's not qualified, you give him five times the amount, you will spoil them, you will ruin them. They will become so proud. So therefore, they should get less. You know, so that's the whole point. You know, the beggar gets, you know, his 1 rupee, and that's it. You give him 1,000 rupee note, you'll ruin him. You know, because he'll go crazy. Does that make sense? A stream is only so big. You put extra water, it floods. You have a pot. How much water do you put in a 1 liter pot? 1 liter. What if you put 2 liters? 1 liter is wasted. So that's the point. However big the pot is, you put that much. So people like Narad Muni, you can give them the universe. Right? Because their pot's bigger than the universe. Does that make sense? And only the sounds that he could hear were, "Blessed be Dharma, blessed be Dharma." Yudhishthira, conducting himself thus and giving paternal assurance to everybody, had none in the kingdom who entertained any hostile feelings towards him. Right? Paternal assurance means he was taking care of everything. It means the father takes care of you, whatever you need. Right? But not that you're spoiled, but not that you're in anxiety. So therefore, everybody was nice. So if he gives up arrogance and anger, then nobody will have hostile feelings, right? Hostility comes because there's a break in sambandha, right? And anger and what did you say? Anger and anger and arrogance, those are both ignorance. So that's an aberration in sambandha. Right? So because he doesn't have that, then everybody will have a good relationship. You have that, then people won't have. Right? So if you say, nobody likes me, then maybe it's because you're arrogant and angry. Right? He therefore came to be known as Ajatashatru, one with no enemy at all. The king cherished everyone as belonging to his family, and Bhima ruled over all justly. Arjuna used to, employing both his hands with equal skill, protected the people from external enemies. The wise Sahadev administered justice impartially. Nakula behaved towards all with humility that was natural to him. Owing to all this, the kingdom became free from disputes and fear of every kind. All the people became attentive to their respective occupations. The rain became so abundant as to leave no room for desiring more, and the kingdom grew in prosperity in consequence. grew in prosperity in consequence of the virtues of the king. Money lenders, the articles required for sacrifices, cattle rearing, tillage, and traders, all and everything grew in prosperity. Right, so you can see is this is actually the method. So we get here is that he acted equally towards all. Bhima administered it very nicely. Arjuna protected it from anything outside. Sahadev dealt with the courts and made everything just. And Nakula dealt with everybody in a very humble way so that, you know, the relationships were cultivated. Right? So he's cultivating relationship. He and Yudhishthira basically are cultivating the relationships. And the other three brothers are taking care of internal, you know, affairs, external affairs, and justice. Right? So you do those five things, and everything goes nice. And it says here, the people became attentive. Means you do that, they become attentive. Someone is protected, they take care of their duties. The man is saying his wife doesn't do his duties. Why not? She's not protected. She's protected. She does her duties. Does that make sense? Right? Yes? No? Okay. Okay, so we'll end here for today.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktavrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.